Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I have to dance when this one comes on. Are you dancing, Michael Harrison, right now?
Dance,
bopping up and down.
Dance.
Yeah?
Yeah. I dance every time we come on together. It's just
Well,
joyous.
That's good.
Joyous.
It is.
So?
Well, you weren't here last week. Was that last week you weren't here? So it's
been
2 weeks.
It was last week that I wasn't here, which means I haven't been here for 2 weeks.
And how did that impact your system? Was it tough to deal with?
Well, I mean, 2 weeks away, nobody remembers me. You can be sure.
That's true.
You Let's know, get 2 minutes. Back to work. In today's world, you're gone. 2 minutes, you're gone. 2 weeks, it's over. So perhaps we should spend the next half hour telling everybody who I am, what I've done.
Do you think that's how it works? Or are you? Do you become more important and more memorable because the rest of the world is going by so fast?
Oh, there's such competing maxims about that, you know. Out of sight, out of mind. What is it that makes the heart grow fonder? Distance?
Time? Disappear? Candy? Chocolate. I think chocolate makes the heart grow fonder. So if you are... It is true that you could be on the air for 30 years in a market and be the beloved morning man who everybody listens to. And a couple of years later, what impact do you have in the marketplace?
Well, you know something. Now you're touching on something that is philosophical and very, very interesting. And that is how fame and relationships and institutions and icons and all the things that we consider to be the real heavy duty lasting things of life, it all has a time limit. Everything eventually fades out. I was reading an article, it was very well written, about 2 years ago, but it stayed with me. It's one of those things, I don't know where I read it, but it just stayed with me. And it listed all a bunch of very, very famous institutions and people that we consider in our lives to be, universal. And mm-hmm. A bunch of experts, people that study time and history and sociology, all weighed in on how long will it be before all memory of those things are gone? Like, how long will it be before nobody in the world remembers the Beatles? Or how long will it be before nobody in the world remembers Donald Trump? How long will it be before the United States of America is a myth? Or that people say, were there really any pyramids? And everything has a time limit.
Yes, and what does that mean to us? What does that tell us about life? That these things are just... they're just kind of the fabric of the blanket that we have on us at a particular moment. And
it means that we should not take anything too seriously in terms of the day-to-day stuff that we're involved with. We should take it seriously, but not where we believe it's the be-all and end-all of existence.
But this reality that you're referring to contradicts the human ego and the desire. I was watching yesterday Richard Blumenthal, the Connecticut senator, is a part of the Judiciary Committee that does the hearings. And
right.
he reeks of this thing. You know how everybody in the state can't stand him, or at least in talk radio world, it feels like he elicits more contempt than other figures in the state. And I was thinking about why it is, and there he gives off this air of needing desperately to be the center of attention, always chasing the camera, always chasing where the bright lights are, wanting to be there. And you have this feeling of neediness that he has that's gratified by being in the spotlight, that he exists in his own heart only as he's being affirmed by the outside world through their attentions. And it's so weird that people are built that way psychologically, and yet the truth is the minute you step out of the spotlight, nobody knows who you are anymore.
Eventually, you know, exactly. It's interesting. Do you believe that everybody in Connecticut hates Richard Blumenthal?
Well, you know, I don't mean that literally. I mean, I get that feeling from the way people communicate about him. He has this, like, I get these angry emails and rant line calls and all kinds of feedback from the mere playing of a sound clip. But I have to be honest. I remember I spoke at the first Tea Party event that was held on Boston Common back in 2008 or 2010, and I mentioned Chris Dodd, and the response from the crowd was unbelievable. I couldn't believe that Chris Dodd, the Connecticut senator, had that much impact on the crowd, but they really got rowdy in response to his name. And there's just certain people who stand out that way.
Well, it's become a political medium, and a lot of passion, you know, comes along with politics these days. Certainly, I've seen radio do a lot of changing along the years in that regard. But in terms of people that need the spotlight, it is a needy thing. And I mean, I can understand some people like it. I mean, Donald Trump loves the spotlight. Look at him. And some people say it doesn't matter if it's good publicity or bad publicity. All publicity is good publicity. Did they spell your name right? And let's face it, we live in a world where most people now are obsessed with publicity. They're obsessed with their own PR. How many followers do you have on Facebook? How many people, you know, have signed up for your Twitter feeds? How many people like you? It's not just people in the media. Everybody these days is in show business. As a matter of fact, some people have larger followings who are not in the media on their social media than people who are in the media. There are people with more followers on their Facebook page than some radio stations have. It's a very transitional time. So this need for attention that you talk about, and the way it flows against the grain of life that eventually tears all things down and makes all memories disappear, is a very interesting struggle that the human ego finds itself in at all times. And there's a dichotomy and an irony about it.
Can I switch this up? I have another topic I want to run by.
You can do whatever you want to do. I'm following you. It's your show. I'm subject to your whim.
I am struck today by this feeling of our concept of our country being a relic of the past, a memory that we can't shake. We don't try to shake, but we believe that the things we learned, say, in school a half a century ago about what America is, that those things still exist today when maybe they don't, that the facade remains the same, but the reality behind it has changed. And maybe we're a whole different country than we understand ourselves to be, because humans have trouble updating their the perceptions that we attach to certain words or symbols. Thoughts on that, please.
Well, don't you think that any enterprise with 350 million people all seeking their own life, liberty, and happiness is going to have faults, flaws, disappointments, hypocrisies? I mean, human beings are human beings. Politics, competition. I think it is unrealistic to expect a nation to have some type of a monolithic character that every aspect of it falls into, you know, those kinds of expectation. That's kind of childish.
Yes, nevertheless, there are times when perhaps we were what we think we are. and that we are less that now, dramatically less that. Do you deny that possibility? Were we ever the land of the free? Were we ever the home of the brave? Were we ever a beacon of liberty for the world? Were we ever the greatest nation on earth? How do you feel about those things when you learned them compared to right now?
Well, how do you feel about most of the things that you learned when you were a kid and a child?
I think 2 + 2 = 4. I still think it was exciting when Dick saw Jane for the first time.
Well, that's why they call it childhood innocence in terms of being exciting when Dick saw Jane for the first time. As far as 2 + 2 = 4, now you're getting into profound philosophy. I mean, Thomas Jefferson at the tender age of 30-something wrote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident." Think about that line. How is that for a leap of faith? We built an entire nation on basically in the opening paragraph or paragraphs of the Declaration of Independence, which really was our first major national document that defined what America is. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Then it went on, you know, that all men are created equal and entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and on and on and on. But eventually, all fact and all constitutions, institutions, notions, religions are based on somebody having a leap of faith, somebody just getting an idea that, well, this truth is self-evident. Can't everybody see it? Don't you see what I see?
Well, I think the power of that statement, hearing you just say the words, you sound way more profound than I've ever heard you. Just saying those words. And I'm not kidding. That's powerful to me. And I think it is because those are words that resonate, that they are linked to something deep within us as humans and what we understand the nature of life to be, that all men are created equal. That is, as an aspirational statement for the creation of a society, that is a truth that we can all agree is real on some level, and we want to bring it to the highest level.
Okay, so following that line of thought, to answer your question, it also has, in order to form a more perfect union. It doesn't say in order to form the perfect union, or it doesn't say a perfect union, in order to form a more perfect, and you use the word aspiration. So it's possible to have two things going on at the same time, what you really are and what you aspire to be. Another way of putting it into a context that's understandable is, which direction are you heading? Are things getting better or are things getting worse? These are all the compass points and the way we deal with a tremendous amount of subjectivity. But back to, you know, these truths are self-evident. You can't have a society or a nation that can survive, you know, divided we fall, united we stand, or, you know, that type of thing, without some type of a common understanding of what that foundation of your philosophy and your principles are. And I think that the thing that's a problem at this time for the United States of America in coming to grips with its nationhood, with its greatness, with its what it stands for, is that because of the change in media, the change in the accelerated pace of communications, and back to what I said before, everybody, every organization having its own platform and its own audience, I think we're at a period where we are having problems coming up with what principles and what truths we hold to be self-evident.
One truth that's self-evident.
What's that?
That all commercial radio up? Stations must take their break every quarter hour. Michael Harrison, we'll talk more coming up on WTIC.
Video killed the radio star.
Well, it's WTIC. We start off on Friday's first hour with Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine. Thank you for taking the time to do this once again, Michael.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm a little shocked. The numbers are in, the initial numbers from last night's competing town hall foray. What's the proper plural of forum?
A bunch of forum.
A bunch? Are you forum?
You're either forum or you're Genem. I don't know. That's interesting. I guess there must be forums. You know.
So the ratings. I figured Trump would dominate the ratings last night with his head-to-head separate channel forum against Biden. And yet, Biden scored 12.7 million viewers from 8 to 9 last night, while Donald Trump on NBC managed only 10.3. So a million and a half different there. The key demo, though, is crazy. A 15 for Biden, a 10 for Trump in the 18 to 49 men. Wow. What is going on here?
Well,
something revolutionary.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it was on more stations. Maybe some of the stations delayed the broadcast till later. There are all kinds of questions that are arising.
Oh, yeah. If the network's affiliates don't clear it live.
Yeah, yeah. There's more to that number than meets the eye. First of all, I as a seeker of truth, not that I have the answer to the truth on this, but as somebody who cares about truth rather than going, look, Biden is winning, or, look, Trump is winning, I don't think it really tells you much about the ultimate election and the ultimate popularity or favorability of either candidate by looking at the ratings.
So it tells you nothing meaningful, you mean?
Nothing meaningful, yeah, yeah. But I, like you, would have, if I had to bet on it, I would have bet that that more people would watch Trump because Trump is more entertaining. And a large segment of the votership in America views politics as entertainment and votes for the president with about the same amount of scrutiny that they would call in to vote for their favorite person on Dancing with the Stars or American Idol. I hate to say that, but mm-hmm. I believe it's true. In many cases, it's just a popularity or a beauty contest. But that being said, as somebody who knows how media operates and how ratings operate, I'm very skeptical of ratings as being a reflection of truth. It's a game. It's a score. But the best team and the team that's more popular doesn't always win in the score of any game. And the game is played the way the game is scored. And I'm not a big fan of ratings. So I did a little looking into it, and I don't have enough facts for me to say, here's what's going on, folks. But let's just say I have suspicions that Trump did not get as fair a shake in terms of the number of stations playing him live, especially on the West Coast.
That would make sense because the discrepancy is so big.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You would expect that to be a competitive thing. I watched, I taped them both, was flipping back and forth for different parts of different ones. And I suspect a lot of people were doing the flipping back and forth thing.
People do that anyway. Have you ever watched two shows at the same time because you figured out when the commercial breaks are? And you start watching one, then the commercial comes on, you go to the other
yes.
one, and you're still
frequently.
Able to follow. Huh?
Frequently.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the whole notion that television is an appointment medium today in the age of smart TVs and, you know, delayed broadcast and taping it and you know, taping is even a word that's obsolete. I just think it's a quaint notion.
Well, no. What else do you say? You can't say DVRing it, can you? No, I guess you can, but it doesn't work as well as taping. Taping okay. survives. I think it lives on as a word.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It does. It means, in a way, it means, you know, eternal measurement and you know, recording. You know,
yes.
I use the word record. I find, you know, when I'm in a studio situation, I try not to say to people, okay, we're taping this. I go, we're recording this. Because recording works out for every medium. But that's neither here nor there. We're hung up on numbers. We're hung up on horse races. We're hung up on polls. And I don't know. I just don't know how important these type of town meetings or debates really are. I mean, doesn't everybody
Well, I think it
know?
Is good to No, people don't know what Joe Biden thinks. They don't know what he's running on. They don't know who he is. They don't know if he's got his marbles. There are lots of questions that remain unanswered. It's remarkable. The guy is, favored to win the White House in a couple of weeks, and most people know nothing about him. Michael Harrison is here. Stay with us. It's time for a little bitty news update, and then we'll continue on WTIC. Oh, yeah. It's Friday. This one came around really fast, by the way, faster than usual. Michael Harrison is here from Talkers Magazine at talkers.com, the Bible of the talk media industry. Michael, I was just watching Dr. Fauci announcing that Thanksgiving is dangerous. We shouldn't be doing Thanksgiving. He's going to do Thanksgiving with his wife, he said. Maybe his brother and sister-in-law, and that's about it.
Hmm. How do you feel about Thanksgiving is dangerous even during good times.
getting together with relatives, even during just over the last decade or so, it's become a very volatile atmosphere.
Well, there have always been fights over the table at holidays. There's always a relative that can't keep his or her mouth shut, and the food that we eat is overeating is not healthy. I think that maybe it'll do us good for a year away from that ritual.
If your overeating problem is only a Thanksgiving problem, then you're in good shape. It's the rest of the days that matter.
Well, I mean, Christmas is upon us. We are now officially in the Christmas season. I believe it starts September 1st. And Halloween has gone to pot this year. I mean, come on.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I mean, it's all messed up. It's messed up. All of these important things that we base our lives on are it's like on haywire. So,
well, what do you make of that?
Yeah, so Fauci says, be careful.
He's canceling it.
Fauci should run for president.
No Thanksgiving.
What was that? We have this little delay between us, and
I don't know that he would do so well running for president, because then you'd have to go back and pick apart all of his statements like they do with every candidate. If you have experience in the public square, it's not a good idea to run for president unless you're just famous like Trump was. It helps to be famous or to be unknown like Obama was and simply be lifted up by the media and vaulted into positions of power. But then again, look at Joe Biden, who's been around for 50 years, and he's running for president.
Well, you said something before the news that we could really explore a few more minutes of, and that is nobody knows what Biden stands for. That's not true. People know Biden. Mm-hmm. Why would they want Biden as president when they really don't know anything about him? Well, they know he's not Trump. This is all about Trump.
I know. But that's part of the brilliance of the strategy of having him be the nominee, is he's this kind of innocuous figure who I don't think people know much about what he represents in terms of policy and what kind of policies he would pursue. I think they think he's a moderate, old-fashioned guy because he's old, and that protects him from being tagged with the charges of radicalism that would befall another Democratic candidate if he were younger and maybe not linked to other periods in history visually.
So you believe he's radical, huh?
No, I believe he's the figure on the party that has the radical element as its driving force right now. So I don't think it matters so much.
It wasn't
a
driving enough
force
to stop him, was it? He said something during the debate, the first debate, the real debate, the only debate with Trump. He said, I am the Democratic Party. I beat Bernie Sanders. I'm not going to be dragged to the left by AOC. I'm now putting words in his mouth, but it's basically what he was saying. You know, when you become the man, you're the man. You know, people used to say
Really.
Huh? Not really?
Not really. You're corralled in some ways by the realities of... You don't think so?
Now, one of the things we've learned from Trump is how powerful the presidency is, how powerful it is, how much influence it has over our culture and over everything. And as far as policy is concerned, we're not going to get any policy done for decades the way we are. You think anything's going to change if Biden becomes president? It's going to still be gridlock. It's still going to be crazy.
Well, it depends if he wins control of the Senate. If he gets, a three-senator margin of dominance in the Senate, yeah, he'll be able to pass a lot of stuff.
Well, you know, theoretically, I just see this this polarized situation continuing for years to come.
And if that's true, what do you make of that? If we have a government which doesn't make new policy, does that represent a problem for the country?
I think that we have very big problems in this country. And with freedom and with democracy and with having a republic and with being adults and with voting comes responsibility. Back to what you said before, are we children or are we grown-ups? We're going to face a tough time ahead. We've got to buckle down and we've got to deal with it. And we got to come to an agreement on terms. We have to increase our educational proficiency. We have to get rid of this damned coronavirus. We have to start listening to each other. We have to develop a set of national principles. We have to seek truth as opposed to victory. We have to look into our own hearts and character. There's a lot of work ahead. It's not just, you can't just wave a wand and now we got a good party in, or now we have a good president in, or this policy is good or that. No, it's deeper than that. It's way deeper.
It's a constant.
Way more complex. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, but both parties are, I was talking to Mike about this today. Both parties are always in power, and they are both the power structure,
yes.
Democrats and Republicans.
They play off each other. They're in business together. They get donations from the same donors, and they dance mm-hmm. to the same puppet masters.
And who are those puppet masters you refer to?
The puppet masters are, some are unknown, and some are very, very, very wealthy and powerful people in businesses that control the means of production and the means of communication. Big-time media, big-time energy, and big-time any kind of production that keeps the world spinning. And that's who they answer to.
So our elected officials, while we believe them to be people we're placing in power, it sounds like what you're saying is we're actually doing the business of big business, of that you're describing an oligarchy, that mm-hmm. big specialized interests where the money flows, they're the ones who call the shots, and any illusion we have of control is just an illusion.
It's largely an illusion. We have some control, obviously, but we are controlled, and one of the reasons we are controlled is because we do have power, and those who want to control the power, do everything they can to keep that latent power of the masses in check. Remember, there is no they. Even those that control us are us. We're not being controlled by elephants. We're not being controlled by Martians. We're being controlled by other human beings. It's organized humanity. Organized mm-hmm. humanity is, you know, whether it's organized crime, whether it's organized religion, whether it's organized politics, organized humanity, in my opinion, is extremely dangerous, as is disorganized humanity.
we're just dangerous.
We're constantly stuck between a rock and a hard place, and that's why we have to be wise. We have to remain independent. We have to understand the difference between the self and being independent spirits and being cooperative and being social creatures. Everything in our wiring is a paradox. And so the answer is, in my opinion, we're going to be facing years of a very serious struggle ahead. And hopefully we'll come out of it okay. Or maybe we'll just all die off and the next generations will forget all this and it'll be a new set of problems. Every generation thinks that it's dealing with the ultimate problems that humanity has ever faced. During World War I, it was the end of the world. During World War II, it was the end of the world. You know, imagine what the Civil War was like when the states were actually killing each other, brother against brother. Is that the wonderful country that you were talking about existing in the past? Am I being anti-American by pointing that out? I mean, you know, what does it mean to be American? What does dissent mean? We have a lot of questions and a lot of growing to do, a lot of questions to ask, attempts at finding answers and growing to do. That's why I...
How do you...
Yeah.
No, go ahead, finish.
That's
up.
Why I try to avoid being a party hack. You know, giving my heart and my endorsement to one party, one ideology, one president. No, I think presidents are there to be criticized because they're so damn powerful and they have such power over our lives and our health and our families and our wealth. Being a true citizen of a democracy such as the United States requires diligence, vigilance, and independence, and you can't just sign off and hope that someone will take care of you, no matter what side that person is on.
In other words, you can't give yourself over emotionally to one team or the other, thinking that you're all in the same boat, because there's somebody whose boat you're getting in if you do that, and they're going to take you where they intend to go.
And especially since they all answer to the same ultimate source that's hidden from view. And that's why, you know, the ship leans to the left and it leans to the right. We get a Democrat, we get a Republican. But ultimately, it's the same stuff. And if you read the literature and you read the newspapers, you read the issues, the arguments going all the way back a couple hundred years plus, they're the same issues. And it's so important to know history. Oh, my gosh, it really is. I first started to learn that as I made my own history in terms of having lived a long time. What else can I say? You know, we're talking philosophically here, but, you know, you brought it up. You asked me some profound questions at the beginning of the program, ones that are definitely, to use a cliche, above my pay grade. But what the heck? This is talk radio. We're here to provoke thinking and do so in an interesting and entertaining way and hopefully be original. And that's the way I view it. You have me on as a guest.
And, of course, everything is above our pay grade in talk radio. Michael Harrison is here. More coming up on WTIC. It's Friday. Michael Harrison is here, first hour. Michael, you study the news all week, keep track of what talk radio is talking about. What do you think the hottest story of this week is?
There's no question. I know what the hottest story. The hottest story this week has been the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearings. That has been a week-long television and radio bonanza. Tremendous amount of audience, tremendous amount of consequence to this whole situation, and that's the top story. The other story that was right behind it in terms of being the big news of the week has been the presidential race and the dueling town halls. A lot of discussion about the balloting issues and the mail and the scandals and accusation, Hunter Biden and the laptop. That whole story.
Yeah, the social media aspect, yes, too. The idea that...
Right. Yeah, and then we get into COVID-19 and everything. And then beyond that, it's the economy. There's no stimulus. People need money. People are getting crazy. They're worried. There's still the crisis in education, although that's easing up a little bit. You got the race relations issue, police reform. Big story still is the kidnapping plot for the governor of Michigan and the governor of Virginia. Then we have foreign affairs. Remember that subject? China, Russia, climate change. And people are talking about sports because sports has become, you know, they say sports is a microcosm of life, more so now than ever. Watching sports struggle both health-wise, business-wise, and media-wise has been a very interesting experiment in how we're coping with COVID-19.
What do you think is going on with, I mean, the sports have been so disruptive, and it's normally such a big part of people's lives. Some people, you know, some people are super fans. NFL season, they'll sit there all day Sunday, a lot of people, just watching one football game after the other. What do people do with the time and the energy, and I assume the money and the focus that they used to give to sports?
Well, I don't know, but they're obviously not watching sports as much as they have. The ratings have not been that good for certain sports in terms of television. They're not going out. Maybe they're spending time with their families. Maybe they're engaging in all kinds of secret activities behind closed doors in their
secret activities. Like what?
And they're, well, I don't know. They're secret, but they're you know, people have been quarantining for so long.
I know.
They have long hair, long fingernails. They don't get dressed anymore. They only bathe maybe once every 2 weeks. Think about it. You know, they've discovered that they're wildly in love with their husband or wife, or they realize what a horrible marriage they're in. They realize that their kids are brilliant or their kids are dumb. There's all kinds of revelations, and my God, we're going through so much change in 2020 that I don't even know where to begin. That's the whole nature of what's happening. We're all transitioning, Todd. Every single person.
And we depend so much as creatures on our habits, and those habits have been taken away. I have a neighbor who I'm friendly with the guy. The woman tends not to be that visible, but during COVID, she hasn't left the house. I've seen her, I think, 2 or 3 times over the last 5 months.
Right.
It's a remarkable thing. And he says she doesn't leave the house. She's scared.
Right.
What an incredible thing.
Yes, there is a significant number, because I don't know the exact number. So I'll say there's a significant number or percentage of the population of people who do not leave the house. Or if they do, they do it as like a little dangerous secret mission in their mask. They go to their place, their supermarket or their post office or whatever it is. And they go and they come back and they stay in their house. They haven't seen their extended family in months. And, I'm experiencing that to a certain degree. I finally am back. Mm-hmm. I am back now in here in New England.
And are you doing family?
No. No, my family is not that thrilled to see me because I dared to go out in the dark world of COVID. And travel across 11 states.
But you are so cautious doing your traveling across 11 states.
I have to now prove myself, and I will. You know, I'll be careful. But you know, I'm not one of these people who are terrified by this. But I also believe, you know, if I were the governor, I wouldn't order a lockdown across the board. But I would order some type of a cutback, some type of a controlled way of living, and we got to find that. You know. Where's the vaccine? You know, where is it? We're going now.
It's coming.
Well, hopefully, but it might be 6 months. It might be 8 months. It may not work with everybody.
True.
The point is, we still don't know how long this damn thing is going to go on.
But we do know our time together has come to an end, Michael Harrison, for this week. I know. That's how it seems. It seems that way every week. Thank you, Michael Harrison, Talkers Magazine. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Todd.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.